If you tell me you're one of those people who really doesn't care about fashion, I'll take your word for it. But I will also bet you own many, many more pieces of clothing than you could possibly wear between washes. And folks who do care about looking stylish may find themselves acquiring new outfits so often they need to cull their closets to make room for what is new. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Just throwing perfectly functional clothes in the garbage feels wasteful, so many of us look for ways to give them a second life. Donating isn't bad necessarily, but it doesn't exactly settle the score on the problem of overconsumption. Allison Chu is a reporter who focuses on climate solutions for the Washington Post, where you can find her recent articles on the environmental impact of the clothing industry, donations, even washing. Allison, welcome to Think.
Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for having me.
How does donating clothes we don't want feel like a kind of pass for having maybe bought stuff we didn't need in the first place?
It's a really good question, and it's hard because there is this idea that, you know, donating, obviously people are doing it thinking that they're doing a good thing, and it can be hard to think through, you know, all the potential implications of that and how doing it in certain ways, you know, if you're not thinking about all those implications, you know, might actually end up in some cases doing more harm than good. And going back to your question, I think there's this idea that, you know, we buy things and then when we no longer have a use for them and we think that they're still in good quality or that some, you know, there's this idea that, you know, I look at a shirt in my closet and I think, well, if I'm not going to wear it, you know, maybe someone else will. And this is going to go to someone else's home and someone's going to cherish it and love it in a way that I couldn't. And unfortunately, that really doesn't happen as often as I think we would like to think that it happens.
And of course, there's an enormous cost to just producing clothing in the first place, right? An enormous environmental cost.
Exactly. And you touched on this earlier when you were talking about the overconsumption issue. And that's really where a lot of these problems stem from, which is, you know, when so much clothing is being produced, there's not enough people to wear it. It doesn't get worn, you know, for the full duration of its lifespan. And then, you know, you're trying to figure out, well, what do I do with this? What do I do with all the, you know, maybe for a clothing manufacturer, they're thinking about, well, what do I do with all of this product? And, you know, for many people, right, the answer is often, if I just donate it, you know, it'll go to someone in need.
One of the most popular destinations in the U.S. for our unused clothing is Goodwill, which has become like one of those brand names that stands for secondhand clothing in the same way that Kleenex and Xerox mean tissue and photocopy.
Right.
How much stuff does Goodwill get from donors in a typical year?
The numbers that were given to me are somewhere in the ballpark of, you know, in 2021, I believe they received more than 107 million donations of used goods, which totals about 5.7 billion pounds. And, you know, that's, if we're trying to contextualize a number, it's somewhere around the combined weight of about 19,000 blue whales, which is, you know, the largest animal on Earth.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff. And
right.
I want to be clear, we're not picking on Goodwill here. They're just a good example because they're pretty open with their data and that sort of thing. But they do, Goodwill takes pretty much anything people drop off in the categories they accept, right? There's nobody at a donation facility or a truck looking through things at the drop-off point and turning stuff down.
I believe they do have a fairly intensive sorting process. What's difficult, and I've talked about this with the folks from Goodwill, is that you know, local Goodwills all, you know, can sort of have their own system. So it might depend on the place that you're going to in your area. But for the most part, there is a sorting process that happens to figure out, well, where can these donations go in terms of the, and if we're talking about Goodwill, in terms of the different sources that they have. So whether it goes to a brick and mortar secondhand shop, it goes to e-commerce, or it goes to the bulk stores, or, you know, if it's in really poor quality, maybe it goes directly to the like a rag trader or you know, rag material type situation. And I think it's also important to note that, you know, we talked about the amount of donations that Goodwill receives. A majority of those donations, much of those donations are actually used clothing.
But roughly half of what Goodwill takes in, they don't end up selling themselves. Is that right?
Right. So it's about half of what they of the donated clothing that they get, they consider suitable for retail. And that basically means that those items can be sold in a brick and mortar thrift store, or they can be sold in e-commerce. And then the remaining 50% that don't meet that quality standard, those then go to the outlet stores, which would be the wholesale bulk items, where you know you're getting stuff at much lower prices, or it goes to the salvage dealers.
So how exactly can the fibers from unwanted clothing be recycled at any great scale? You mentioned like rag processors. What, broadly speaking, what happens there?
So with the salvage dealers, basically they'll take these products. My understanding is that they take these products and they can be turned into rags, essentially, so things that are used maybe in auto shops or something like that. And then when it comes to recycling clothing, that is a little bit more of a, and recycling in terms of, you know, turning something back into native product or native material to create more clothes. I think those technologies are still emerging right now. And, you know, Goodwill is, as I mentioned in my story, they have, they're working on a number of local and national projects to figure out how can they keep, you know, how can they extend the lifespan of these unsold donated goods, whether that's repair and upcycling programs, or like we've sort of mentioned right now, this textile to textile recycling.
So we might drop off clothes at Goodwill or some other clothing resale organization, some nonprofit, and think, well, this is great. I've saved this item from a landfill. But these places mm-hmm. have to put stuff into landfills every year, right? Or even incinerators.
It depends on the place. So, in the case of Goodwill, since we're using them as an example right now, they will only immediately landfill any donations that arrive wet or soiled, and that's largely for, you know, hygiene and safety. The more challenging part is, you know, once these items leave Goodwill, you know, whether they go to a rag dealer or they end up in someone's home or something like that, then it's a little bit harder to track what happens to them. And there is a concern among experts who study clothing and sustainability broadly, and this is not specific to Goodwill, so broadly around the idea of donations, is that there is a worry that things that don't end up donated could potentially end up in landfills, or they could end up, you know, shipped overseas and potentially create a problem for communities that live there, getting an influx of clothes that, you know, they might not need and they might landfill. Does that sort of, there's kind of like a little bit of a chain that happens.
The overseas shipments, I think, are a fascinating part of this whole dynamic, because maybe in our minds, we imagine if clothing ends up sent overseas, like disaster survivors or people living in desperate poverty receive these items so that they can have something at all to wear. The mm-hmm. reality on the ground is a whole lot more complicated.
Absolutely. And, I spoke to an expert who, you know, really emphasized the point that in the aftermath of disasters, donating clothing really isn't the best thing to do, unless, you know, you are donating to an organization on the ground that has made a specific request for some type of clothing item. But if you're sort of just donating your clothing, it's not useful, and it actually could potentially create a bigger problem for the for these relief organizations because they don't have the resources to clean and organize or make your donated clothing usable for the people in the community they're trying to serve.
So it's not a good idea to donate clothing in response to a disaster either, for the most part, in the United States or overseas?
That's what this expert that I spoke to was saying, mostly because people usually need other things besides clothing more. And unless you're donating specific items, you know, I think the example he gave me was something like socks. Like if an organization has asked for socks or has asked for underwear or something essential like that, and of course with those items you should also be donating new items, obviously not your used underwear or socks. But it's usually a very specific request when it comes to clothing. And so if you're sort of just going through your closet and, you know, seeing that sparkly top that you wore for New Year's Eves ago and thinking I should send that over, that's probably not going to be the most helpful thing to do in a post-disaster situation.
It is ironic that, like, socks and underwear, those are two items of clothing that most of us use until they have mm-hmm. very little life left in them. We don't tend to do that with the clothes we wear on the outside.
Right. And I think that goes back to what you mentioned earlier, which is, you know, there's a lot that's being produced. Trends come into play here. So, you know, you might not wear something for very long because it goes out of style. There are sort of all these other factors that come into, you know, the clothing that we're wearing on the outside.
So how do donated clothes or can donated clothes from wealthy countries sent abroad hurt local economies in those lower income countries?
It's a really great question. You know, I think the concern that has come up is if all, you know, a large amounts of clothing, it may be hard to determine the quality of the clothing that's being sent overseas. Also, is it sort of potentially a lot of impractical fashion items that gets an over? So, you know, it's not plain t-shirts. It's not, or, you know, it might not be plain t-shirts. It might not be sort of these more practical items that get overseas. You could potentially have people who are, you know, inundated with these clothing, with this clothing, and then they're trying to sell it in that country where it is, and then that maybe competes with local merchants and the textile industries in that area, and you could really just kind of create some competition where it didn't need to be, because largely the understanding is that the clothing that gets sent overseas, you know, can potentially be sold at a lower cost than maybe something that is produced locally.
So you might be hurting cotton farmers and textile mills that exist in these places without intending to do so.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a really good point to stress, is that, like, there's a lot of well-intended thinking behind donations, and you know, I don't think anyone ever does anything with the intent of harming another person, you know, in another country when it comes to clothing. But, you know, sometimes there can be these unintended effects.
Allison, this was really interesting to me. What can we do to increase the chances that everything we donate will actually find itself to a new owner? Because I think most, I'm going to speak for myself here. We have, like, you know, a box in the attic, and we put things in there as we realize that they're, you know, targets for donation. We don't necessarily inspect those items beforehand to make sure they're good enough to sell.
Yeah, it's a great question. And there are some pretty simple best practices that, you know, can make things a lot easier for the people who work at the organizations where you might be donating your clothes. And so, you know, very broadly, one of the biggest pieces of advice from the experts that I spoke with is just to simply be thoughtful about what you're donating. So if we're thinking about the condition of the clothes, you know, try to make sure that whatever you're donating is in the best condition possible. That means garments should be clean and free of pet hair or lint. Make sure you're emptying the, or sorry, make sure you're checking the pockets and you know, if there's trash or personal items, emptying those and taking those out. If anything you're trying to donate has visible rips or damage, like a missing button or something like that, you can try to mend that and repair it before you donate. And then there's also some thinking that should go into what you're donating when. So, you know, if it's summer time, maybe you don't want to be donating your heavy winter coats and sweaters. And so it's the idea of trying to, you know, donate when things are, you know, to match the seasons if you're in a place that has seasons. And if you want to donate your heavy winter coat, then you should wait for, you know, the colder weather to do that. And then there's more more demand for you know, those specific types of clothing items.
I was really excited to learn this precisely because I think I've done it wrong a number of times. Like, typically, you know, it's at the end of the summer when we might drop off a couple of bathing suits that don't work for us. We don't necessarily want to store it, but we probably have more space than folks at a clothing resale place have to hang on to unsold items for like 9 months before they're in season again.
Right. That's a great point. And you know, you would really, as an individual, just be doing, you know, the people at these organizations or at these thrift stores, probably a pretty big service by, you know, keeping that, storing it in your home and then donating it when it's more seasonally appropriate.
There are some other things we can do to keep too trashed to wear clothing out of landfills, at least for a while. My mom used to take my dad's old t-shirts, and those were our cleaning rags. The first time I walked into like a store and saw a package of rags for cleaning, I just couldn't believe that people would buy something like this.
Right. And that's another really great point, which is, you know, there are a number of things that you can do in your own home to extend the lifespan of your clothes. And, you know, turning it into rags is a great idea. You know, one of the experts that I talked to, she gave me the example of, you know, she loves white t-shirts, but white t-shirts, as I'm sure many of us are familiar with, can have a fairly short lifespan when we're thinking about the amount of stains that you get on them, or if you're wearing them all the time and you're washing them and they, you know, start to lose their integrity. And how she does it is, you know, she'll have her white t-shirt, and then once it becomes whatever
gray.
She deems gray, right? I'm like, what's a nice way of saying like no longer suitable to be worn in like public? Mm-hmm. But, you know, once she finds the size of that shirt is no longer suitable to be worn in public, you know, she'll repurpose it into a gardening shirt. And then once it's maybe beyond that, then maybe it goes to a sleep shirt or and then, you know, it then maybe at the end you turn it into a rag. So there are sort of these different things, and it's basically just repurposing what you have. And, you know, I totally understand that you can't do that with all types of clothing. Like, you know, maybe these basic, it works better for these basic items. But it's just kind of approaching clothes, thinking about all the ways in which you can hold on to them longer. I really liked the, way that she explained to me, which was, you know, when we're buying our clothes, we should be thinking about it almost as a marriage, which maybe sounds mm-hmm. too intense, but the idea behind that is, you know, we're thinking about a long-term commitment to this item of clothing, and not only how you're going to be interacting with it in your life, but then, you know, what will you do with it at the end?
Well, that seems like a really good way to even make decisions about what we need to buy. So, you know, you mentioned like mm-hmm. that sparkly top for New Year's Eve. You know, I think about like, you know, Mother of the Bride dresses, things covered in sequins. Maybe right. If we realize that something can't be easily repurposed, we ought to be especially careful about acquiring it in the first place.
Absolutely. And that's where things like, you know, the rising popularity of companies that rent clothing, especially for special occasions, those come into play. And so, you know, if you're talking about a dress or a suit or a garment that you really know that you're probably only going to wear this once, maybe two or three times, then it might make sense to rent it. Or if you do buy it, then you can consider donating it to, you know, a more targeted type organization. So some, maybe a group that, you know, provides prom dresses for people in need, or provides suits for people in need, you know, and then you know that there's a higher chance that, like, that item will be, you know, will be passed on.
So again, I'll stress, we've talked about Goodwill a lot because they're like the biggest, maybe best known organization. We're not saying they're any better or worse, but how much thought should we give as to which, assuming we're talking about nonprofits here that collect old clothing, mm-hmm. how much thought should we give to where that clothing goes?
It's an important part of the decision-making process, you know, and unfortunately it does mean a little bit more work on the side of the individual. So, you know, someone like you or me, but if you are really worried or have any concerns about what might be happening to the clothes that you donate, there are a lot of resources available online to help you research different charities. So Elizabeth Klein, who wrote the book, The Conscious Closet, which is a great read and has wonderful tips in it. You know, in that book, she points readers to resources like Charity Watch or Charity Navigator. I think the Better Business Bureau has a website as well, and they basically evaluate organizations and you know, provide information about how they operate. So that's a good resource to use if you're curious about you know, where you might be donating.
I don't know if this has really come into your reporting, but you know, when the pandemic kept lots of people home, many of whom mm-hmm. are still working more from home than they used to. Part of me thought, well, this is great. We won't be buying as many, you know, outfits for the weekend versus outfits for work. But lots of people acquired a whole new wardrobe of like soft pants and fuzzy sweaters.
Right.
So it wasn't like we stopped acquiring stuff.
Yeah, no, I think there was very much sort of a lifestyle shift during the pandemic. And with that, you know, clothing obviously reflected that lifestyle shift. But, you know, that's when we start to think about, you know, retail and retail as e-commerce versus, you know, brick and mortar stores. And, you know, does that impact our consumption? And, you know, I think the understanding is that with online shopping, it is so much easier to consume in the sense of, you know, one stop, click and buy type thing. And that's where the experts that I spoke with, you know, really emphasized taking a pause, thinking about some of the things that we already talked about, you know, like viewing the t-shirt you're about to add to your cart, like as a marriage or as entering a marriage, right? Thinking, do I really need this? You know, am I going to use it? How am I going to use it? What will I do with it at the end? So it's I think the ease with which we can shop now and in these days really sort of makes those thoughts at the beginning of the process much more impactful.
And we do have to be mindful of the way these things are sold to us. You know, when you talk about this metaphor of a kind of marriage to the clothing that we buy, you mm-hmm. walk into any Target or Walmart, and depending on the season, there are a lot of like one night stand pieces of clothing, right? That St. Patrick's Day t-shirt or that Halloween shirt or whatever.
Right, right. And it really is, you know, that when it comes to these questions about sustainability, you know, there's a lot that can change the impact. But, you know, one of the things that research has shown is that if you can really extend the lifespan of what you've bought and use it as much as you can, that really does make a difference in terms, you know, and you're not sort of right, buying that novelty t-shirt, wearing it once, and then, you know, getting rid of it.
Right.
But, you know, the number of wears can really help.
So maybe a plain green t-shirt instead of something with a shamrock on it is a better choice.
Right. Or maybe you love St. Patrick's Day and you have a shamrock t-shirt that you will wear, you know, for the entire week of St. Patrick's Day celebrations every single year. And that's, you know, that's your go-to t-shirt. Or maybe you even like to wear it outside of St. Patrick's Day. Then, you know, the calculus shifts again.
Allison, with the rise of online shopping, lots of clothing retailers have made it very convenient to return things. So some people now are in a habit of like buying an item in a couple of sizes and just returning the one that works best. I hadn't realized some of this stuff might be essentially dead to the retailer even after we've just tried it on and returned it brand new.
Right. So it depends. You know, most retailers do handle their returns and but yeah, there are some situations in which you know, maybe that item doesn't get resold, but from my reporting, my understanding is, you know, the concern around returns can sometimes be more linked to you know, the transportation emissions of having to be shuttling, you know, items all over the place. And, you know, we've seen in some of the research that returns will obviously increase the amount of, you know, trucks that have to come pick up your item or you know, take your item somewhere else. And it's just, you know, and one area where you could easily reduce that emissions impact if you didn't return your item. And as you mentioned, you know, with online shopping, there is sort of this habit that you can buy, you know, three pairs of pants and in different sizes, try them on at home, and then, you know, send back the ones that don't fit or send back, you know, all of them if you don't like them. So it's sort of, you know, trying to curb, you know, those types of habits.
Are there ways to reduce the chances we'll need to send something back?
That's probably something that's a little bit more on the clothing companies than it is on the consumer, because really all the consumer can do is know their size and, you know, try to pick the right size. But, you know, there's really the online retailer should try to, you know, maybe provide more improved customer service, more accurate sizing information. And then on the consumer side, you can try to, you know, build out your, or you can try to minimize uncertainty, I'm sorry, by, you know, either reading through all the customer comments and reviews. My understanding is that like some online retailers are even offering virtual try-on. So that's another option, you know, if that's available to you.
What is virtual try-on?
I think it's, you know, where you can sort of see the garment on you. I've never done it myself. But my understanding is that it does exist as a thing, or as a tool, I'm sorry, that, you know, some retailers are offering now. But, you know, there has been sort of this growing interest in, you know, digital fashion and all of that. And you know, maybe this is part of that. But it is another way, again, I guess, to potentially see the item on you, even if it's in like a 2D virtual form.
Okay. And in any case, despite like our desire to have the thing right away, we should probably avoid asking for free shipping unless we absolutely need something.
It's less about free shipping and more about
fast shipping.
Yeah, the speed of delivery is really something that we should try to think about. You know, when we're ordering things, if we select fast shipping, you know, there's a possibility that means your item gets loaded on a plane. which has way more emissions than, you know, a delivery truck. And, you know, if you're ordering multiple items and you select the fastest shipping option on all of them, they might arrive at different times. So then you have a truck that's going to, that's coming to you, coming to your neighborhood more than it has to, compared to if you selected, you know, I'm okay waiting, you know, I'll get all three of my items at the same time. Then that's, you know, that's one trip, versus three separate trips that the delivery truck has to make.
I want to switch gears here, Allison, to the laundry stuff. You wrote a fascinating piece a couple of months ago about washing clothes. This has an enormous environmental impact, and it's something we just don't talk about very often.
Yeah, I mean, with laundry, I think it's one of those things that it's something that we just do. But there's actually fairly, you know, low lift things that we can change about how we do laundry that can really both be helpful to the environment and also prolong the lifespan of our clothes.
Are most of us washing our clothes more than we need to?
Absolutely. You know, there's this understanding that, you know, for many people, you know, you wear something and then you sort of just toss it into the laundry bin without really thinking, is it dirty? Or does it really need to be cleaned? And the issue that can arise with that is, right, you're washing that garment more than it has to be washed, and you're doing more loads of laundry. And we know that, you know, both the washer and the dryer consume energy. The dryer consumes a very large amount of energy, and both the washer and the dryer can really degrade clothing. So in the washing machine, it's getting beat around. If you're wearing synthetic fabrics, you know, while it's in the washing machine getting beat around, you could be releasing microplastic fibers, you know, into the waterway from your clothing. Similarly, once it goes into the dryer, it's being beat around in there as well. You know, the fibers are coming off. All this energy is being consumed. And so there's simple things that can be done, you know, in your household, that really have, you know, can really make a difference in you being able to keep your clothes looking better for longer. And, you know, that will hopefully lead you to keeping them for longer, wearing them more versus throwing them out. And then also, you know, cutting back on your household's energy consumption.
I think lots of folks were raised that clothing doesn't really get clean unless you use very hot water. It turns out that's not true, right?
No, actually, it's washing on cold is very effective. You know, especially now with these more modern detergents, you can wash on cold and get a good level of clean. I'm the experts that I spoke with, you know, one of them mentioned that really, you shouldn't be washing on hot water unless, you know, you're trying to sanitize something. So if you have, you know, maybe like bodily fluids or blood on your clothing, maybe if you work if you're a healthcare worker, you know, then the sanitizing, you know, hot water settings on the washing machine, you know, would make sense. But you know, typically we're washing our clothes on settings that are unnecessarily warm.
How can our choice of fabrics affect how often we might need to wash things?
It's a great question, and there are actually you know, differences in the types of fabrics. So broadly, natural fibers like wool or cotton generally need to be washed less than synthetic materials such as polyester. So polyester, as we know, huge in active wear. It has moisture-wicking properties. Unfortunately, the material is oil-loving. I think the scientific word for that is oleophilic. I might have mispronounced that, but the idea is that, you know, it can attract your skin oils and then contribute to body odor. And there's been some research that has also shown that, you know, sweaty smelling compounds actually cling to polyester fibers, and they don't wash out completely. And so you get this sort of buildup of odors over time, you know, meaning that polyester type fabric is something that you will feel like you need to wash more often. Whereas, you know, with something like wool, wool is actually naturally odor resistant. And so those fibers can absorb large amounts of moisture. You can keep your skin drier. And they also can trap odor molecules and only release them when you launder them. And so if you have a wool sweater, and I'm sure people have maybe noticed this just by wearing wool sweaters, you know, you can wear them over and over and over again, and there's no smell, and until you have to, you know, then launder them after, you know, however many so wears that you deem is acceptable.
And some things that say they are dry clean only can be hand washed. Is there a way to sort of game out which is better or worse for the environment, washing versus dry cleaning?
It's tough because, you know, like we've sort of touched on with all these different things, you know, there are a lot of factors that come into play, and it really can depend on the individual and how you do your laundry. I think, at least from the experts that I spoke with, a good, you know, thing to keep in mind is try not to dry clean too often. So like the washer and dryer at home, you know, there is energy consumption related to dry cleaning. Some traditional operations will also use polluting chemicals that have been known to be potentially harmful to human health as well as the environment. And, you know, some research suggests that those chemicals might even stay on your dry clean clothing. But, you know, there are some types of clothing that do have to be dry cleaned, you know, some anything with heavy beading or embellishment. But if you're accustomed to, you know, dry cleaning your, like a silk garment or a wool garment, you could wash that by hand. And, you know, there are some best practices for that as well, in terms of making sure you don't accidentally damage your garment by washing it by hand. So the advice that I got from the expert I spoke to were, you know, you should try to test a small section of your garment to make sure it's suitable for hand washing. So that means looking for any color bleeding from the fabric or any warping or shrinkage is a sign that you should not hand wash it, and you should send it to the dry cleaners. And then, you know, always use cold water and mild soap.
Not everybody has access to an outdoor space for this, but boy, I'm really convinced after reading your work that air drying stuff is really like a bonus for the environment.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the easiest things that we can change about our laundry habit is cutting down on the amount and frequency with which we use the dryer. So dryers, one of the experts that I spoke to, she described them as energy gobblers. And it's true. It takes a lot of energy to heat up the dryer, to run a load, especially if you're drying on high heat. And you can really completely eliminate those emissions and the energy usage by, you know, taking your clothes from the washer and putting them on a rack or hanging them, you know, putting them on a rack if you live indoors, or hanging them up if you do have the backyard space. But like you said, not everybody has that space. You know, I don't. I live in a pseudo studio apartment and don't have a backyard. I have a laundry rack. And so, you know, in those situations, I try to air dry clothes that I know are synthetic fibers, you know, to try to cut down on the amount of of fiber release that could happen in the dryer. I'll air dry garments that I wear and I wash a lot. Again, maybe that's active wear, or like that plain basic, you know, some like leggings or things like that. So it's thinking about the clothes that you wash the most often and trying to, you know, maybe prioritize air drying those versus having to run the dryer every time.
It strikes me, Allison, that a lot of us could make many of these changes around, certainly around washing our clothes, and nobody, you know, outside our laundry room would know the difference. But there is kind of a cultural pressure, right? People talk a lot about washing things every time they wear them, and we see all these commercials for Tide and Gain and whatever. Are there ways that we can get over what we think is the right way to do things now that we know better?
It's hard because we're talking about changing ingrained behaviors, and oftentimes, you know, there's maybe even familial or cultural considerations. You know, I do laundry very similarly to how my parents do laundry. That's how I saw it being done. And so there's always challenges when we're trying to change, you know, these types of daily, you know, or these types of ingrained behaviors. But one piece of advice that I got from an expert was to really think about small changes. So the example she likes to use is, you know, just 5% of what you're, so in this situation, you know, just start air drying 5% of your clothing, or start, you know, not washing 5% of, you know, what you would normally put in the wash. And it's really kind of approaching it in these small steps rather than saying, okay, I'm going to air dry everything that I wash, you know, from the get-go. You know, that might be really overwhelming. You might realize, oh, this takes too long, or I don't have enough space. But, you know, there's this idea that, you know, if we all collectively did that 5%, maybe 10%, that could really have an impact as, you know, in terms of collective impact.
This did not come up in the story that I read, so if you haven't looked into it, we can just move on. But does small load versus large load make a difference? Are we better off waiting until, you know, with that 5% reduction, waiting until we have a large load of laundry to wash it, or should we just do little loads?
That's a good question. You know, this wasn't in the story. I did talk to somebody about this. I believe that, you know, at least when it comes to the washer, the load size doesn't quite seem to matter in terms of affecting efficiency. So, you know, the washer will operate the same, sort of regardless of the amount of clothes you put it in, you know, provided that you're using the right setting for like large load, medium load, small load. But it could be helpful when it comes to the dryer, because again, like the whole point about reducing the amount of clothes that we dry is to, you know, make sure the dryer isn't having to work so hard to dry your clothing. So if you're, you know, jamming it a large load into the dryer, and maybe that might require the dryer to work harder, to be on for longer, you know, to dry that really large load. But you know, there are some tips, like we've talked about, some really actionable tips that you can do aside from, you know, trying to air dry as much as possible to cut back on that dryer impact. And you know, that's simple things like make sure you regularly clean your lint screen and your dryer ducts and the moisture sensors that are on the dryer. You know, instead of choosing the timed drying setting, you should try the automatic cycle. And the more modern dryers have, you know, pretty good moisture sensors that will determine when your clothes are actually dry versus, you know, you're running the dryer on a time setting for an hour, but you only really need it for 45 minutes. And then the other tip that I actually thought was really helpful, and I didn't know this when, before I wrote the story, was, you know, if you can dry your loads of laundry back to back, you can actually make use of the residual heat from the dryer instead of, you know, drying one load and then waiting until the next day to dry the other. Then you're starting from a cold dryer, basically.
Allison Chu is a reporter who focuses on climate solutions for The Washington Post, where you can find her recent articles on the environmental impact of the clothing industry, donations of clothing, and washing our clothes. Allison, this has all been so interesting, and I really appreciate you making time to talk with us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
You can find us on Facebook and Instagram by searching for KERA Think. The podcast is available wherever you get podcasts, or you can listen at our website, think.kera.org. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.